Okay, we're going to go ahead and call the Joint House and Senate Education Committee meeting to order. The time is 8 o'clock. Today is Friday, March 18th. In attendance on the Senate side, we have Co-Chair Thomas, Senator Stevens, Senator Davis, Senator French, and myself, Senator Meyer. And at this time, I will let the Vice Chair, Representative Pruitt, introduce the House members.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Present from the House side are Representative Feige, Representative Peggy Wilson, Representative Kawasaki, Representative Seaton, and Vice Chair Representative Pruitt. Chair Dick is at the Tenon Chiefs Convention. Representative Cisna is also excused, and I believe Representative Kawasaki will be leaving early, just for the record. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Representative Pruitt. Okay, today we, at our joint committee, we will have a presentation by the Alaska Board of Education and Early Development. And then following the presentation, we're going to open up to questions from committee members for the board. We do have the chair, Esther Cox, is here with us today, as well as several other members of the board. Welcome to the journal. And before I go too much further, we also have the commissioner of education is here as well. Commissioner Hanlon, good to see you. So with that, Ms. Cox, do you want to please join us? And if you could put yourself on the record and then proceed with your presentation, and we'll keep this very informal.
Thank you.
And you're going to introduce the board members that are here?
Okay. Yeah.
Okay, great.
So, good morning, Chair Meyer, and to all the representatives and senators on the education committees. My name is Esther Cox. I do chair the Alaska State Board of Education and Early Development. I live in Anchorage. I am a retired high school principal from Anchorage and been around education longer than some of you have been around, I'm sure. I am always delighted that our board gets to meet in Juneau in March, because it provides a couple of really great opportunities. The first opportunity, of course, is to have an interaction with the education committees, which I have made no secret about. I am delighted have been established. I know your hardworking committees. I read the update every single solitary time it comes out, and you are giving education the due that it has coming, and I thank all of you for that. So for that, and then it also, on a personal note, gives me a chance to meet with my senator, because I truly feel that he needs my advice and input, and I relish the opportunity to give it to him.
And so, who's your senator?
My senator is Kevin Meyer.
And we agree with you very much.
So, okay. I will try to keep my comments brief, because I really am truly interested in the topics that you sent to the board that you were interested in discussing, and I want the full board to be able to participate. So I will make my comments and then join the board, and I'm sure that they will be able to speak eloquently on any subject that you have in mind. You know, what I always told my students when I was teaching, if I don't know it, I'll make it up. So that'll be, think about it that way. All right. First of all, I'd like to remind you very well may be apprised of how the board comes about. But just briefly, we are a voluntary board that is appointed by the governor for staggered terms. A full term is 5 years. And no more than four members of the board can be of the same political party as the governor. And there should be one member from each of the four judicial districts in the state of Alaska. Three members at large, and then at least one member should come from one of our REAAs, and our board does fulfill those requirements. We also have two advisory boards and two advisory board members, a student, and our board works with ASAG, which is Alaska Association of Student Governments, and at their fall conference, they interview students and send to our board three students that we interview and select one. Now, you will notice that in the audience, there are two students here. So in December, we selected a student representative, and we had one already. But that gives that student, the new student representative from December to June, to sort of get used to seeing and what really the board does, and a chance to kind of interact and not just be pushed into the fray, because sometimes students are a little bit hesitant to make comments, and we really, really do like to hear from our students. And trust me, by the time the student starts in June, they are fully acclimated and ready to go, and we hear from them in spades. So I always say we have one student on the board and one student in waiting, kind of like student teaching. That's my background. We have a military advisor. I'm sorry he isn't here today. His name is Lieutenant Colonel Grant Sullivan, and he is selected by the commanding officer. So, and I did want to mention when I talked about the board briefly that Senator Davis, of course, has served on this board and served with distinction, and we were happy when you were on the board. And then she went on to bigger and better things, as you all know. Okay. Before I have the board members introduce themselves, I would like to make a comment about Tiarna. Tiarna comes from us from Manicotic, and she has much to be proud of because her school has just been named a nationally distinguished Title I school. So she's very, very proud. And with that, I will ask the board members to stand and introduce themselves and tell you what districts that they represent.
Pat Shire, 1st Judicial District.
Jerry Benshoff, I live at North Pole, and I represent the 4th Judicial District.
Uvalotuk Uvauna Kipnik Kikaptagurkmi. Good morning. My name is Bunny Schaefer. I'm from Kotzebue, and I represent District 2.
Jim Mariner. I live in Anchorage and public at large.
Donald Handelin. I'm the student representative. Originally from Nome, but I attend Mount Edgewood High School.
Phil Schneider, I represent the 3rd Judicial District.
Kiana Fischler, I'm from Manicotic. I'm the speaking student rep at elect.
Good. Is that everybody?
We will get everybody.
Yes.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Esther.
Besides the Colonel, Janelle Keplinger is a member from Kodiak, and she was unable to be here today. So, okay. You've met the board, and now down to real business. I have to tell you that it was pretty startling to understand that the Department of Education had been cut $4 million. And without going into a whole lot of harangue regarding how the money comes to the department, what have you, to cut $4 million means to cut a couple of programs that I want to at least apprise you of and tell you why that money needs to be reinstated, one of which is the pre-K program, and Jerry Benshoff will talk to you and speak eloquently on that. I want to mention the teacher mentor program. The teacher mentor program would be cut dramatically, and ladies and gentlemen, it has done amazing things. I was talking with Commissioner Hanley about it, and you know, we talk in terms of teacher retention, and the statistics are pretty great. As far as teacher retention goes, they say from 68% to 80% of teachers retained, the ones who have been mentored by our state mentor program. But the big wow was a real surprise to me, and that is that the statistics show that between seasoned teachers and new teachers, and when we do our SBAs, which are our standard tests from the state, seasoned teacher students score 20 to 30% higher than new teachers students, okay? Except if that new teacher has been mentored. And if that new teacher has been mentored, the grade or the point difference is 7. Now, that is a distinctive difference, and it certainly is proof that, to me, that the program is working. And if we're not about student achievement, then I think we better pack up and go home, because that's what this department and this board is all about. So without pursuing it any further, other than to say that we do have a program that truly does work. And it really it really would be a shame not to see that money put back in for it. Also, I'd like to put a plug in for the Department of Labor. The Department of Labor had $1 million cut that was going to career technology. You have a bill on the table that one of our board members will speak to, a comprehensive school bill and compulsory age school bill, and you're talking in terms of moving the compulsory age from 16 to 18. And, you know, there are arguments on both sides of the table, but one of the things that needs to happen, that needs to be foremost in your minds, is that we need to have, other than the standard delivery system with youngsters, we need to have multiple options. And one of the best options that we can offer for youngsters, and particularly the kinds that have, ants in their pants, and they're the ones that want to quit school at 16, are hands-on experiences. Now, I know I've told you this before, but I'm going to remind you once again. I was the principal at the King Career Center in Anchorage for 8 years. And I don't think I'm lying when I tell you that I had students who dropped out of their home high schools because I shared students. I was not a comprehensive school. I shared students with principals back in the home high schools. Kids might drop out there, but they didn't drop out of the King Career Center because it was a hands-on career technical kind of program. And it had a completely different delivery system. And those are the kinds of things that you have to think about in providing for students who think they're old enough to drop out of high school. You've got to have those hooks to catch them. Okay? The other thing about it is that the implementation of our Alaska, I know you all have a copy of this career education plan, which came directly out of the summit that we had for our Alaska education plan. This is a masterpiece, and we're in the process of implementing that. Once again, that carries a fiscal note. You all have been given a list of topics that we have discussed this past year, and it looks like this. And I'm not going to read that list to you, but at any rate, if you have any questions on that list, we're happy to answer them. And then you also sent a list of topics that you were interested in our discussing with you, and the board is ready to address any of those. So one thing I will say that I once again thank you for this opportunity. I hope the discussion that follows this will be hot, heavy, and enlightening for all of us. And to begin with the issues, I'm just going to hang right in here for another couple of minutes that Senator Meyer and take on the high school exit exam. I know that is of great issue to all of you. It is to us. We had a very long work session yesterday. Our agenda I know I'm going to be kicked out as chair because the agenda is not moving along like it should. However, and we spent a lot of time talking about this. Okay, there are some things. Number one is that it is an accountability factor. At this point in time, our board is not ready to recommend that we give up any accountability factor that we have. However, we do recognize that there is a need for some real revitalization. So beginning immediately, and the State Department is on a timeline. Beginning immediately, there is going to be a revisit of the standards. You know that the National has come down with a core group of standards, and we are making a comparison with Alaska standards and the Nationals, and if we need to beef up, we're beefing up. We have not adopted the National standards because our standards were designed by Alaskans, and I know you as representatives of Alaskans from across the state know how important it is that Alaskans are involved in the things that have to do with them. So we are revisiting and redesigning. And at the board's June meeting coming up, we will be having a big discussion on what is it exactly, where do we want to go? Do we want to go to end-of-course exams? Do we want to beef up the exit exam? How does the work keys play into all of this? And so it's going to be a comprehensive thing. We don't want to design anything that doesn't meet Alaska standards. So with the revisitation of the standards and looking at the assessment tool, we're going to build this together. excuse me. Perhaps even maybe it would be a suggestion of moving to differentiated diplomas. All of these subjects are subjects that we could sit and discuss for a long time. But that's our job as a board, and we will be coming to you with a recommendation. Now, I won't make you promises that in January, if you pass SB 1, which is great, it's an opportunity to communicate with the legislature, we can give you an update. But by June, or by March, when we meet again in Juneau, we will have a recommendation ready to go for the education committees regarding where it is we're going to be and what this assessment tool is going to be that is based upon the standards built in Alaska. So with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to move back to the board and dig out the list of concerns that you had, and we'll be happy to answer questions and have a dialogue going. I thank you again for having us here. It's great to have the communication.
Great. Thank you, Mrs. Cox. And again, I want to thank you and the board members for the time and effort that you put into this very worthy cause, and we appreciate your input.
Thank you.
So, Ms. Cox, I guess the question would be, as we have questions, do you want the members who are prepared to answer it come up?
Sure.
Okay.
Great.
Okay. Well, gosh, where do we start? I think we have a lot of questions. Why don't you just stay there, Ms. Cox?
You're supposed to be obnoxious.
Yeah.
I vote for you.
Well, the first question I have, you served on our task force
over yes, the interim,
pertaining to the performance scholarship program. We spent a lot of time on that over the interim, and you were there, and I appreciate that. And then also President Senator Stevens had a task force as well, and he may have some questions pertaining to that. But certainly you gave us your input on the performance scholarship program, and we're with 30 days left in the session, we're going to have to make some decisions on the program. Do you have any thoughts that you want to share to this committee on the Performance Scholarship Program? And
well, I can refer you to, I think you have a packet, and we do have a resolution from the Board of Education that supported this being a performance scholarship, that it would be a merit scholarship. And that's exactly where the board stands. I know that you were struggling with a needs component to it, and when I was on the committee, I was hoping that that needs component would file through Alaska Advantage Program, and the merit scholarship would stay clean as a merit scholarship. The way I view the merit scholarship is that everybody can do it, because everybody starts at the same point, and we have great, I think that the board has wrestled with regulations for this and has established some guidelines for it. And I'm very confident that that is going to, number one, help beef up what we are offering kids in school, put some more rigor there. And we always talk about rigor, but, you know, rigor is a funny word. Sometimes it's easier to talk it than walk it. And I think that this merit scholarship certainly is going to give the opportunity for schools to walk that talk as far as rigor is concerned.
Okay. Well, thank you, Ms. Cox. And just to let you know, this committee, the Senate committee, passed out the Performance Scholarship Program, leaving the merit portion intact, but then also having a component in there that says a certain percent also would go to the Alaska Advantage Program for the non-traditional student or the needs-based student. So we feel like we addressed both those issues. And the House, I'm not sure where they're at on the scholarship program. I'll let them speak to it. And then let me just ask one more question, and I know committee members have several questions for you. And to tell you the truth, I have not read all your resolutions yet, but I do have them here.
That's good.
I will read them.
Before I get to your office, I hope.
There's been a lot of talk this session, too, about various pre-K programs and the importance of them. And then others have talked about maybe doing an academy after you graduate, before you get to college, so you don't have to do so much remedial work. And I understand these are all intertwined, starting with pre-K all the way up to the university level. But do you have, you or your committee have any thoughts? Obviously, you already mentioned the pre-K is very important to you. Do you want to expand on that, or maybe you have one of your committee?
Senator, may I have Jerry Benchoff come up here?
Yes, you may. And as you come up, if you could, again, state your name and then for the record, we are keeping.
I'm Jerry Benchoff. Of course, the board officially okayed the pre-K pilot program. Just yesterday, we got all the data on the first year of the pilot, and we're about halfway through the second year of the pilot, and that was what was funded. And so the board feels that the pilot should continue, that, of course, 1 year of data isn't sufficient to make a decision on it. And when we get the second year, we still feel that we would need at least a third or fourth year of the pilot. I think pilots are misunderstood. It isn't that you do something for a little while and then you keep doing it. A pilot is really to get concrete data so we know what a good program is like and whether or not we should continue it. We were pleased with the data that we saw from the first year. There were three standardized tests that were administered at the beginning of the year and at the end of the year, and that will happen again this year. So you see, at the end of this year, we will have twice as much data, and we would be able to compare how the second year goes with the first year. I understand that specific funding for pre-K is in question, and I think that we would like to see the pilot continued. Everything relies on funding. I think that there are many people in this state that feel this is the beginning of what will eventually be a universal pre-K program. I think the legislature will have to make a decision on that, because that's going to be quite costly in terms of the money that you will need to find for that kind of program. And you need to think now if that is indeed where we're leading. This program, this pilot program, I don't know how much you know about it. It was on a grant basis, and various agencies wrote a grant, and they were given the grant to various places. Anchorage had a grant, Juneau had a grant, and the rest of the grants were in the more rural areas. many of the pilots were in conjunction with Head Start programs, and I think we were able to expand the number of youngsters that were involved in the pre-K program beyond what Head Start was able to enroll. And in other areas, they were not a part of the Head Start program. And I think if you have not seen the data, it's in our packet, and I'm sure that someone at the department would be happy to forward that to each of you, because it's very interesting. Are there any other questions?
Senator French.
Thank you. Welcome, Ms. Benchu. Hi, good morning. In debate on the funding for pre-kindergarten, I read that at least some folks were of the view that the services provided through the pilot were duplicative of what Head Start was doing. That is, that there's no additional services or no additional kids being brought into the program, but it sounds like your view is different, that it was actually a bigger effort than what Head Start had been provide. Is that right?
Through the chair, Senator French, it is my understanding that it was expanded from the Head Start program.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Seat.
Thank you. You know, and I haven't seen the data, but I understand one of those grant programs was home-based, homeschool-based. Did you look at the comparison of those, or are you familiar with that data? Should we just wait until we have the whole pile?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, some of those things were not in the data that we saw. We've compared, you know, programs were evaluated, but in terms of exactly what each program was like, I can't comment on that. Sorry. But I'm sure that someone at the department can help you with that.
Okay. Any other questions on pre-K? Not do committee members want to go to a different topic? Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to ask a question that could be taken misconstrued, and I don't mean to be offensive to anybody, but as you know, first I would like to say I very much appreciate Senator Davis's bill that would establish better communications with the board. I think that's extremely important. We've done that with the university, and as much as I respect the administration, it's really nice to hear talk to the board because you do decide the major issues. But I did want to talk a little bit about the selection of the commission. Let me say I have the greatest respect for Commissioner Hanley. I got to know him. I just think very highly of him. But as you know, the Commissioner of Education is the only commissioner that we do not confirm, the only one. Every other commissioner we do confirm. That's our responsibility. So the process of selecting a commissioner is extremely important to me, extremely important to the legislature. Some questions arose as to how it happened. My understanding of the rules, and they may be wrong, are that the board selects several names, sends them to the governor for his selection of the final name for the commissioner. I'm not sure that's what happened. I'd like to know more about it. I think we have a right to know. I think the public has a right to know. How did that really transpire? What are the rules under which you select a commissioner, and how did it happen this time?
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, I will defer to our chairman.
Chair Cox, that's why you get the big bucks, I think.
Yes, Senator Meyer. Excuse me, I'm waiting for those. It may be a long wait. Through the chair, Senator Stevens, the statute is fairly specific. The board selects and sends a name to the governor's office, and that it's on approval of the governor. Okay? In this particular instance, I had, as chair of this board, had a conversation with the governor's office, and the governor's office gave me a name, and so I took that to the board. Now, the board had the opportunity to do one of two things. First of all, we examined the resume, and then we interviewed at length. And I did not make up questions for the board and did not assign the board questions. I told the interviewee that I was going to let the board have at it. And so we asked a lot of questions. After having had the interview, the board could have done one of two things. The board could have made a motion and sent that name to the governor for his approval. Or if the board felt that this particular person was not qualified and could not or would not represent the students in the state of Alaska, then our option was to go out for applications, once again, screen, interview, and send that name to the governor's office. After a very thorough interview and discussion on the part of the board, we came to the conclusion that Mike Hanley had the characteristics, the people skills, the communication skills, and administrative background. No, he'd never been a superintendent. However, he had great administrative background, had excellent references, to be Commissioner of Education. And that's the name that we sent to Governor Parnell. I understand that it's a very different process than what you normally go through, as you indicated earlier, Senator, lack of confirmation. I'm not really clear. Is there another board that selects a commissioner? I know it's done this way. But the bottom line is
Fishing Game does select the board, selects a commissioner, but they are, that commissioner is reviewed by the legislature, and we do confirm that individual.
Okay. Well, this is the way the statute is written, and how it came about, I can't tell you. I could only guess because it's education, and maybe they felt whoever wrote the law felt that the board, who normally comes from an education background, could do a better job. The bottom line is the governor's still in charge because the governor can accept or turn down that name, and the board then has to go back to the drawing board, so, which has happened in the past.
I understand what you said, and honestly, I mean no disrespect to anyone in the process, but this is such an important issue to Alaska, such an important issue to education. Are you convinced that, in fact, the independence of the Board of Education was respected?
I'd have to answer that yes, because we still had an option, Senator. Pardon me, through the chair. I'm not very good at that.
You're fine.
We still had an option, Senator, to either say yes or no, and I think the respect of that was there. It's a process that, in my mind, and I'm speaking for Esther Cox right now, in my mind, the board does all the work, and if the governor doesn't like it, then you still have to go back to the drawing board, and it's kind of a different system, that's for sure. But it does work, and it's I think, a respect to the board to have the board involved in the selection of the Commissioner of Education. Amazingly enough, the statute also says that the Commissioner of Education serves at the pleasure of the board, which is a little astounding to me. Okay, so does that?
I appreciate your explanation, and the Commissioner does serve at the pleasure of the board. I mean, that is the law.
Yes.
Thank you.
Senator Davis?
Yeah, I just wanted to follow up, Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to follow up on Senator Stevens' question to you. You said that you went to the governor, and the governor gave you a name, and you brought it back to the board. Is that correct? Back to the Board of Education?
To the chair. Actually, Senator Davis, I didn't go to the governor. The governor's office contacted me.
But you did go to the governor. That's what you stated in your statement. That you met with the governor, and then at the time he gave you a name that you
That's
put back.
That's why I said the governor's office. If I stated I went to the governor, the governor's office contacted me and gave me a name. Yes.
Is that the usual procedure that when you are ready to interview other people, look for a candidate for commissioner, that the governor's office give you names?
Through the chair, Senator Davis, I have been a part of selecting of three commissioners. I don't know, maybe. I don't want any evaluation of that right now, if you don't mind. Anyway, in the first instance with the first governor, we did not have a communication. But the second governor, it was a very long, involved process, and it was a matter of several different names. So this was the first time, but there has always been a communication between the existing commissioner and the governor's office to say, is there someone that you are particularly interested in? Because one of the issues senators and representatives that we really want to happen with the commissioner is that it is someone that the governor feels that he or she can work with. That's key to our existence as a board and as the Department of Education. Education wants to be on the forefront of any governor's list. So we certainly want a commissioner with whom the governor wants to work. As far as the confirmation, Senator Stevens, you know, that if that's part of the law, I don't know why that's in there, frankly.
Okay. Could I get
Senator Davis? Sure.
Thank you. So in the final analysis, then, you did not interview anyone else for the commissioner's job this term?
To the chair, that's true, Senator Davis.
But the statute clearly states that the Board of Education has that option, not option, you have that responsibility to sit down and decide what you want to do and interview or send out letters, whatever you're going to do. That is your role, right?
To the chair, yes. And I need to tell you that I checked with the Attorney General's office so that I knew that we were doing the process according to the statute and was assured that we could interview, make a decision, and either say yes or no, and then move out for interviews. And that's precisely the process that we used.
Thank you.
Okay.
Sure. Follow up. Just to make sure I understand this, because I'm not sure I do. I do appreciate your years of service as a teacher and on the board, but do you feel that, again, nothing, no specific commissioners, but do you feel that you have the obligation, the right, the duty to discharge your commissioner if they're not performing what you, the board, thinks is right? You sort of gave me an odd response about you're not sure if you have that right.
Pardon me, through the chair. Senator Stevens, according to the statute, I know we have that right. It's real scary to me, to tell you quite frankly, and I think that I've thought about that when we have interviewed candidates for the commissioner, and I want to select very, very carefully and judiciously so that that issue doesn't come up. If that issue came up and I were on the board, then we would face it.
Thank
Period.
You.
We would face our responsibility.
Very good. Representative Seaton, on this topic or different?
On this topic.
Okay, Representative Seaton.
And thank you. And again, no disrespect to anyone. What we're concerned about here is the process. The statute is very carefully written to take politics as far away from education as possible, even limiting the number of people that can serve on the Board of Education, the State Board, and the number of folks in there that can be there. And so I guess, you know, concern from a number of members of the House is, as the future goes, are we setting a precedent that says that the governor will now have the ability kind of to select instead of the Board of Education? And if the Board of Education is actually able to terminate someone, I mean, I think the legislature has gone as far as it can to insulate education from politics. And I think that that's one of the reasons why this is not a confirmable position, because, of course, we're all in politics here. And so the substitution of that seems to be that the board would select, interview and forward names instead of a political request or political decision. So I just want to express our concern, and not on a specific person or anything, but for the process going forward, that we don't oftentimes what happens with us is something happens and then that becomes the default position, that future governors are going to say, I want this person, and all of a sudden we change the procedures that the expectations that we have. So I just wanted to express that. It's not really a question, but that's why there is concern among a number of members about the procedure And we don't know how to make it any clearer than saying that, you know, the board is supposed to interview and select and suggest that the governor he could reject, but that that's really somebody that you are hiring, and not just validating that somebody's selection is okay. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator, may I briefly respond to that?
Sure. Yeah, and then I'd like to go to a different topic. Go ahead. Ms. Kauf.
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, I understand what you're saying, sir, wanting to divorce the selection of a commissioner from the politic as much as possible. The kicker is it's on approval of the governor, and we have had names rejected. So that's we do the work, as the statute says, but the final thing is on approval of the governor.
Okay. Well, we may want to visit that statute at some point in time. Senator Thomas, did you have a
I did.
Question? We're not sure who this goes to on your committee.
And you can appoint that person. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The subject of counseling, advising, and advising in high schools and the board's position on that, if you have one, it seems extremely important to me and to many on the education committees regarding how kids get some direction and as far as what's needed for particular careers and started early, and whether high school or maybe even junior high school is the place for that to take place, and what districts and how districts are addressing that issue.
Through the chair, Senator Thomas, that's my name beside that subject. Sorry. I know that this is a real issue for Representative Seaton, and we've talked about it before. Frankly, I'm delighted to see in the scholarship regs that there is a provision written in there for, what did we say, counseling or advisory for those students particularly. There's a long history of advisory programs, and no, the board has not taken a stand on advisory programs. And as a matter of fact, we have not had any really lengthy discussions regarding advisory programs. But I was a part of the implementation of middle schools in my district and statewide, did a lot of, you know, was a junior high principal at the time that we were moving into middle schools. And one of the basic, there are three basic tenets for middle school. One is intramural sports, one is teaming, and one is advisory programs. And those are the three basic stools for middle schools. And what we found was that it really is a training issue, a professional growth issue for teachers. How to deal with these? Some people fall into the pattern very, very easily. Frankly, I think that a teacher being with a group of students for 1, 2, or 3 years is a great idea, because there becomes not a, for lack of a better word, a bonding issue, and that particular student knows that somebody really knows who he or she is and appreciates, and I think it's a great program. In high school, excuse me, we have moved to smaller learning communities in many of our high schools, which isn't exactly an advisory program, but however breaks down the huge unit into smaller areas so that once again you can have a more personalized interaction with students. And so I don't know if I'm getting to your question or not, Senator Thomas, but no, the board has not really taken a stance on it. I think it's a good thing, but I think it's also a professional growth and a training issue for teachers on what to do. We've had schools in my district in the past, when I was a principal, try to do this, but didn't have an established curriculum or didn't really have an established plan on how to lay this out. And in some instances it worked, some instances it didn't. It's much easier and more malleable at the middle level age than it is at high school. High school kids they're a different psyche, and you know, they just see it as playtime, and that's not what it's all about. So, but as far as our merit scholarship thing is, I'm delighted to see that in there.
Senator Thomas?
Thank you. Appreciate that that answer. And do you think that if in fact the board did take that up, that there one of the or some of the thoughts would be that that advising should be something that is taught at the teacher preparedness education course line in the University of Alaska, because I believe that the board certifications put some emphasis on that as well as a variety of other things.
Through the chair. Senator Thomas, you know, sometimes the answers that we come up with, it needs to be in the teacher preparation program. And if everything we think needs to be in the teacher preparation program, they're going to go into school until they're really old people. But it is an excellent suggestion. How to deal with small groups of youngsters and how to really identify. Many years ago, when I was president of the National Association of Secondary School Principals, I sat and we wrote a treatise on the American high school called Breaking Ranks, Changing an American Institution. It was the first thing written on the American high school since Ernie Boyer had written High School, I think, a book, High School, in 1983. And one of the concepts in that treatise was that we need to personalize education. Part of the reason that alternative programs are so successful with youngsters is that there are fewer kids and they get close to an adult. And so the advisor program, as Representative Seaton has indicated eloquently many times, the advisor program does that. Yes, I think our board should be talking about it. We just have had other issues.
Many. Thank you.
Thank you.
Very good. Again, before you leave, Chair Cox, one of the concerns that I have with our Senate Education Committee is that we're pretty much urban guys. Our most rural member is Kodiak. Now the House is a little more diverse, but I guess, and I know you have a student rep, I think, who's from the rural areas as well as a committee member. And I guess I would just like some feedback on how we can better reach the rural areas as far as long distance learning and getting all the schools up to the high standards that are set in the performance scholarship program, assuming that passes the legislature. And in fact, it did. The program itself did pass. It's just there's no money tied to it yet.
That's your job.
Okay. Well, first, I'd like to get some feedback, though, from your rural members as to how we can better prepare the schools so that all kids statewide have a fair and equal opportunity to obtain this scholarship. And I know a lot of this is going to have to do with long-distance learning, and I don't frankly know how that's working or how that's – and if it is – I'm sure it's not as good as classroom, but it is the best we have right now.
Thanks for the question, Senator. I think it's a good one. We have Kotzebue, Nome, and Manicotic here. I'm going back, and I'm going to invite them to come. We'll Great. Start with Kotzebue. Bunny?
Good morning, and again, thank you for joining us this morning.
Hello. Good morning. Again, my name is, for the record, is Bunny Schaefer, and I'm from Kotzebue. And as far as reaching out to the rural students for the scholarship program, we do we just got a report yesterday on the virtual school network that's being developed right now. And it's a consortium of, I believe it's 11 districts, and CERC is leading that network. They are in the process of developing some distance delivery classes.
To reach assistance, press 0. To enter a breakout session,
there's also
to dial a phone number or get all missing
that are currently offering distance delivery classes too as well. But distance delivery classes can only go so far. Your best teaching opportunity is face-to-face with a highly qualified teacher in the classroom. So it's very difficult for students to get that one-on-one face-to-face with a teacher that's, you know, on the television. So that distance delivery shouldn't be the end-all to the scholarship program. I think we need to do more work in that area.
Great. Well, let's hear from the students, and then we'll have some questions, okay? Either one of the students comment on long-distance learning?
For the record, Donald Handelin. I represent Nome, and I also attend Mount Edgecombe High School, which is a boarding school in southeast Alaska that does have a lot of rural students who do come to it. And I think Mount Edgecombe is an example of students who want to come and get a different education. And it's you have a bunch of highly qualified teachers there. I think best way to reach the rural thing is through the distance education, but there definitely does need to be some face-to-face. So if somehow it could be integrated so that there is the virtual network, but then still having educated people come to the villages and do some labs or something with students in the communities.
Kierna Fischler. I don't have...
Where are you from again? I'm sorry.
Manicotic.
Okay, thank you.
From where I'm from, we don't have a lot of experience with distance delivery, so I agree with Bunny about the face-to-face getting it out there.
Okay, very good. I think we have some questions. Representative Wilson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. Do you think that we should wait then until things are set up better, or should we proceed?
I'm speaking on behalf of myself and not on behalf of the board. In my opinion, we're really disservicing the rural students in this process where if we don't have the system set up to offer those types of classes that the rural students will be eligible to for the scholarship program, then it's a disservice to those students, in my opinion.
Oh.
So you're saying just wait until we get it all put together first before we start?
For the program to be successful for all students, yes.
Thank you. Okay. Senator Thomas, are you done?
Yeah.
Okay. Senator Thomas?
I think Senator Stevens will get.
We're going to leave first.
No, I'm okay.
Okay. Senator Stevens.
Just a quick comment on that issue. And I hear you. I think that's a serious problem. We keep hearing people say the solution to the scholarship program is distance ed. And I believe that if you have a really highly qualified teacher on one end delivering education, it's important that you have someone on the other end helping the student to understand it. My understanding of it would be that maybe it would be a teacher's aide or somebody like that. But at the table when we were meeting with the Higher Education Task Force, the member from the NEA representative said their expectation whether there would be a highly qualified teacher, certificated teacher, at both ends. That becomes enormously expensive, and I'm wondering what would be your vision if you're going to deliver. I may have made this clear. If you're going to deliver through distance ed, you want to have a highly qualified teacher delivering it from some central location. Who do you have to have on the other end helping the student understand it? Do you have to have a certificated teacher there as well?
For it to be successful, I believe you would have to have a certified teacher at the other end. Instructional aides, they don't have the educational background that a certified teacher would have. The other area of concern would be the area of the SAT and ACT testing. If you live in Anchorage, you can go to Sylvan Learning Center and get more training or get more help with the test prep and with the cut scores so high for the SAT and ACT tests. A lot of the rural students, they don't even have test prep classes or curriculum for those students to take.
And I do respect what you have said, and as well as the NEA representative, but you see the position it puts us in, because not only do you have a teacher in a small community who says, I'm not capable of teaching higher science or math, and so you hire someone to teach it out of a central location, but you still have to have a second teacher at the site. I mean, that's enormously expensive, and I don't know how we pay for that, but it's good to hear that you agree with the NEA representative that it would require a certificate to teacher on both ends of that pipeline. Thank you.
Very good. We have a couple other names here on the Senate side, and then I'll get to you, Rep. Feige. Senator Thomas and Senator French.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I understand and share your concerns over that particular issue, and we've wrestled with it for a long time, and unfortunately, I guess we've come to the conclusion that if we seek perfection, we will never do anything. We'll just keep trying to reinvent what we're doing. However, recently a regional corporation leader indicated that schools such as Mount Edgecombe may be, although unpopular with some people, at least interim solution as we build the capacity. And I wondered if the young man who actually attends Mount Edgecombe would comment on that, how he feels the education that he's receiving at Mount Edgecombe is a great deal better than he would have received where he was initially going to school or not.
Through the chair, Senator Thomas, most of the students who attend Mount Edgecombe High School enjoy it, and the reason for that is because every single one of them has to apply for it. So everyone has to take responsibility for their education first by applying and going through that process. So I think that kind of puts it ahead. Like if.
Take a breath.
Yeah. I think that Mount Edgecombe is a great example, but the only thing I see is if there were more similar things, and it would have to go to the same standards of having students want to go to them, because that's one of the big reasons why Mount Edgecombe is successful.
Talk about some of the different opportunities you have.
Yeah. At Mount Edgecombe, we do have a lot of different opportunities. We have a CTEC program at Mount Edgecombe where our students are working with people down in California and doing real original research on bowhead whales up in the Arctic. Through my genetics program that I'm in, we're doing original research on plants that scientists haven't done. So we're doing original research, and the opportunities at Mount Edgecombe give us what we would never get in our home communities.
Okay.
Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. You know, I know typically the Senate Education Committee adjourns usually at 9 o'clock, but I'm willing to continue on if the other members are for a few more minutes, as long as we have the questions and we have the distinguished guests here with us. So we'll keep going. If you have to leave, then just go ahead and get up and leave. Senator French.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Just a question and a comment, a question for our students, whether either one of you have had any experience with distance delivery courses during your time at high school.
Through the chair, I've not had any experience with distance delivery.
Through the chair, I have not either. I haven't.
Thank you. And the comment is, I seem to remember as we were debating the performance scholarship bill that we asked the department for a list of the schools that either offered the full curriculum necessary to qualify for the scholarship or in the absence of that curriculum, which of those other schools have broadband access to give them sort of high quality ability to get distance delivery. I don't know if you've gotten the report or not or any feedback, but I know I haven't. So that's more to the department than to the board. Thank you.
Yeah, I think Eddie Jean's. Okay, I think that you do have a list of the schools and that the survey and the superintendent saying they do have long distance learning or don't. Could you share that with Senator French? Okay.
With all of us.
Yeah, with everyone. I have a copy. I figured you just sent it to. Very good. Thank you. Let me continue here with Rep. Feige, and then we'll go to Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Schaefer, going back to distance learning and having varying qualifications of teachers at both ends, I can certainly understand why the union would want to have a highly qualified teacher at both ends of a distance learning connection. And certainly the individual giving the actual instruction online should be highly qualified in the subject. Is there a need, however, to have a highly qualified teacher in that particular subject present to help teach the subject, or is it, does it, could it be just simply a highly qualified teacher in any subject just to assist with the teaching?
Through the chair, I would say it could be a certified teacher. They don't have to be highly, in my opinion, they wouldn't have to be highly qualified in that particular subject area. Otherwise, there wouldn't be the need for the distance delivery.
Okay. And follow?
Sure. Go ahead.
If that's the case, a lot of the aides that I've run into are certainly, perhaps they don't have the specific, you know, psychology of teaching or other academic credentials, but they're certainly pretty good at helping students understand a lot of these subjects. So using that logic, why would an aide not be sufficient to assist in the teaching of the subject?
Through the chair, in my local district, most of the teacher aides are down at the elementary school. We don't have teacher aides up in the high school areas.
Okay. That doesn't answer my question, though.
As far as being able to assist the student, I've seen some pretty bad instructional aides. I'm being very honest here, and if I was a parent, I wouldn't want them being responsible for my children's education.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Peggy, Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to follow up for a moment on the distance delivery, and also something that's been really interesting in the that Representative Dick, Chairman, has brought to our committee is every the start for about 15 or 20 or 30 minutes of every committee meeting, a different superintendent from around the state is calling in, going through their district and what programs they have. And it was very interesting that we have urban districts that have a requirement for graduation that every student take at least one delivery course. So urban districts are also identifying the ability to take a course online as something that students need for their future preparation and their future involvement in community. So, you know, at some point, if urban districts are saying this is something that is vital to learn and vital to be able to work with, I don't think we want to say that rural districts should say we don't want any of that, that urban districts are saying this is a very important skill that we need to teach our students. So I don't know if the Senate has been having those kind, I mean, you have a shorter session, so I don't think you've been having those, the benefit of those, but it's been very interesting, and the distance ed piece was extremely aware. But what I wanted to really ask about was the theme-based education, and we had St. Mary's, and we had Matsu, and several others that are having remarkable success with their education, and it was all from the theme-based education and project-based education instead of a class of math is just doing math, and I'm wondering whether the state board has been looking at theme-based or project-based education more heavily, because the reports that we're getting back are that it seems like every one of the districts that is employing that as their major technique has had great success. I mean, 90% graduation rates and 87% going on to post-secondary and those kind of things from rural districts. So anyway, I'd like to pose that to the board.
Okay. Did you get the question out of there?
Did you hear that?
You're on the board.
Yeah. I don't think it was a question.
Yeah, the question is the board looking at curriculum as theme-based education or project-based education instead of the single-class subjects, because that's what the – it seems like there's been great success that we're getting reported back from those districts that are doing that. But I don't know if the State Board is looking at that as either a change in direction of education or otherwise implementing that.
Through the chair, no, we have not been looking at project-based or theme-based curriculum. We usually don't get in that deep into the school system as far as the different types of curriculums that are offered at the local schools and districts.
Okay. Good. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm thinking back when we used to live in Tok, because there were several villages around Tok. But when we've been hearing some of the comments from some of the schools, I've heard some say that they don't remember the last time someone graduated from their school. And I'm sure that's very few across the state, but that comment has come up. And so if there's no one that's even graduated from high school for a long time in an area, the aides that may not have even graduated from high school are really good to work with kids. But I'm thinking for comments that you made about the aides, and some of them have never had algebra, let alone advanced mathematics. And so I'm thinking that if students just have an aide, the aide might not even understand the subject matter at all. And so I guess I'm trying to figure out we're looking, and we as legislators have to look ahead, not just today, and the prospects aren't the greatest for Alaska right now. Our pipeline is getting low, and just because we have money right today doesn't mean that we're even going to be able to continue anything that we would just start new today. And so we're trying to think, okay, what can we do that can continue and make sure that education is going on? And has the board thought or tried to think ahead of ways that changes can be made in the schools to perhaps make education more relevant for the kids in the school that doesn't necessarily cost money? And I think we have found by listening to the different schools that some of them are doing things that haven't the changes that they're seeing and the results that they're seeing don't always cost money. And so I'm thinking with what Representative Seaton said, the fact that sometimes if the theme-based, and what he means like the theme for this semester might be every single teacher, and granted some schools only have two, but for every class, every different subject matter, you have an overall theme, and it might be
dinosaurs.
Yeah, or it might even be clouds. I mean, whatever it happens to be, the atmosphere that the math teacher talks about using that theme, the reading teacher teaches using that theme, the history teacher, so that kids really can get into it because it's the same thing throughout, and they can make it more relevant for them. They can talk about outside what's going on in today, not in that's in a book that doesn't always have a relevancy. And because the state school board is in charge of the education for our kids, not the governor, not the legislature, although we are the ultimate responsible ones, but because you're not connected as much with the governor as the other commissioners are that you could control and look at some things that are happening. And so do you do any studying of different things that might make a difference in Alaska schools that you can pick up from something that you heard maybe in an education meeting or something you read that Texas might be doing that we could take that little tidbit and maybe make a difference? Do you guys go into things like that at all?
Yeah, I think there's several questions in there. but I think overall, if you know of any creative ideas that maybe they're doing out in some of the rural areas or other areas of the state or other states that you know that you could share with the committee, and you have some ideas as well. Okay. Well, let's hear from the rural folks here, and then certainly any other commissioners that have some ideas. We're certainly open and want to hear things that are working.
Well, through the chair,
that don't cost money, by the way.
We do have the state board does have what we have developed through the education summit called the Alaska Education Plan, and through that plan, we have working groups. And I know Representative Seaton has been at several of our meetings for the graduation working group. So those working groups are trying to develop those type of things in their particular area that they're working on. We have the graduation working group. We have the early childhood working group. We just adopted a new literacy, or we will be adopting a new literacy blueprint at today's meeting. If it's passed. So the state board looks at it in that respect as far as the different working groups and coming up, trying to come up with different ideas. And also I wanted to say that we are a local control state, so the curriculum is adopted by the local school boards. We don't go out and say what the curriculum is going to be at in the whole state. As far as imaginative different ways of looking at things in our district. I can't really think of anything off the top of my head. I probably could if I thought about it a little more. But okay. Somebody else said they wanted to address that.
And certainly if you have any ideas or thoughts, you know, even if it's next week sometime, we'd love to see it or hear it. So,
okay.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Pat, I think you're new, so if you could.
For the record, Pat Shire. I live here in Juneau. I was recently reappointed, and I believe we'll be meeting in a confirmation hearing.
Indeed. A couple weeks, yeah.
In a couple weeks. And I represent the first judicial district. Now, my background is a little bit different. I was a member of Alaska Home Educators Alliance, actually, on their board years ago when I was first appointed to the position I sit in. And from that perspective, I can tell you that the board does have a perspective, at least one or two of and others, that are attempting to challenge the traditional delivery method. For example, if we look at different venues regarding graduation rates and delivery of instruction and student achievement, Dr. Brian Ray of the National Home Educators Research Institute published a pamphlet that I supplied to several members of these bodies some years ago called Home Education on the Threshold. His independent research plus research from others shows that if you're outside of school, certification is not correlated to student achievement. In other words, that disconnects. While in the classroom we know and we have statistically demonstrated that teacher quality is fundamental to student success, if you're not in the classroom, if you're in a different environment, a home, for example, the certification level no longer correlates with success. Economic factors no longer correlate with success. I'd be happy to supply another copy to members. I was in my basement the other day and found a stack of them. We know that also the department has been working to approve alternative deliveries, the Reinventing Schools Coalition is very interested in achievement-based matriculation rather than, as I've said in board meetings, if we put a timer on a student and it goes off after 180 days, it doesn't mean they're ready to move on. And so the department has worked very hard in the past to allow those school districts that want to matriculate students based on their performance and their demonstration of proficiency to put them into this framework that No Child Left Behind thrust upon the state and sucked up all our oxygen for so many years. The former commissioner, the current commissioner, and the board are moving past the panic of trying to achieve No Child Left Behind proficiency. And we really are looking at trying to help districts who are doing different things in order to meet the needs of the students, because it really is on this board. I'm pleased to say the chair cracks the whip. This is about the kids. That's who we're here to serve. And as you may imagine, Senator, Mr. Chairman, and we are examining alternative delivery, alternative evaluation methods. We are very interested in the graduation rate in terms of trying to improve that. Teacher quality, the mentor program, while it does cost money, I think Madam Chair illustrated the stark difference in new teacher performance in that respect. And when we realize we're hiring about 1,000 teachers a year, brand new ones, that is a significant challenge. And many of those teachers are not even from Alaska. We have before us from time to time the teacher preparation programs from the different universities in Alaska, and we collaborate with them both through the board and through the department to try and improve the product that we're turning out. My bride actually is studying to be a principal in the Rural Alaska Principal Preparation Program. All of her coursework, with the exception of one seminar a year in Anchorage, is delivered distance. And her classmates are throughout the state of Alaska, in Tok, in Bristol Bay, with very thin bandwidth. And that process, now these are dedicated adults who have a goal in mind, which is not always the case with a high school student. But they are finding a sense of community, of supporting each other, and they're getting it done. We had the shocking exposure to a YouTube video by the Anchorage School District and by some of the education support services that got together and showed the board, Did You Know 3.0? And of course it's blocked on the state network, perhaps, maybe not here at the legislature, but I recommend that you take a look at Did You Know 4.0, the one published by an outfit called SHIFT Happens. I spelled that because I didn't want it to be misheard on the record. Shift Happens. And it's produced by a technological group that gets together once a year to map the future. And it's stunning. We simply cannot afford to continue to move the deck chairs and hope the boat won't hit the iceberg when it comes to education in Alaska. And I'm thrilled to be part of a group that really is trying to unwrap this thing and decide innovative ways to meet the need for the future, create incentives that haven't existed in the past in sectors like through the Performance Scholarship Program, which will drive the districts who have the local authority to decide how to allocate their money. As the parents come and pound on their doors and say, you need to do this for my student, creativity in how to meet those needs, we hope will result. I'd answer any further questions.
Very good. Thank you, Patrick. I think the I think we're going to adjourn the Senate Education Committee. House would
the House will be the same.
Okay. Very good. Well, I thank you for your ideas there. Again, thank you for all the commission members that joined us today. I understand your meeting. You met yesterday. You're going to meet again today. Appreciate your time, your ideas, your thoughts. Let's keep this communication going. And again, I think that's what Senator Davis's bill hopes to achieve as well, and because we should just see each other once a year. For the Senate Education Committee. committee members. We are going to meet again Monday at 8 o'clock, and we've scheduled a two-hour period there because we're going to finish up the public testimony on the BSA, which is Senate Bill 84. May or may not take the full 2 hours, but we wanted to allow that amount of time. And that will be the only issue that will be taken up that particular day. So with that, I think the Senate will stand adjourned. Representative Pruitt, I'm not sure what you want to do.
Our next meeting will be on Monday at 8 o'clock. We will be hearing a presentation from the Northwest Arctic School District Superintendent. And we will also be continuing the discussion on HB 104, which is the Alaska Performance Scholarship. I know there's conversation about potentially passing it out, but I think there's been some questions that have come up since then. We'll talk to Representative Dick Moore as when he gets back. So that will be it.
Okay. If there's nothing else to come before the committee, we're adjourned. Thank you.